It's time for today's episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast, recorded in front of a slightly tipsy studio audience at world-famous Champy's Fried Chicken. We will have the latest on Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, and recruiting. Watch live and send us your questions on the 11 Alive Sports page on Facebook. Be advised, this podcast is off the record and not safe for work. Also, be sure to subscribe to the UGA Sports Live Podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the UGA Sports Live Special Championship Edition of the podcast. I'm here with Jim Donnan, superstar, the winner of a national championship, the guy who knows what it takes to get there. He's going to be answering your questions throughout the show. We're here live at Champy's on Baxter Street. Want to say thanks to all the people that are here. Say thanks to Josh for letting us come into Champy's and ruin his place. Thanks to Dave McMahon getting us up and running. Had some connecting issues there, but those have been solved, hopefully. Want to definitely thank all our friends at Athens Ford, Your Pie, Cable East, 365 Game Day, all those people who makes this show possible. Big thanks to 11 Live Sports for we had a great time at 11 Live Sports out in Pasadena. They took care of us. They let us on their webpage, so be sure to give them the thumbs up. If you have a chance to get out and check out all the new trucks at Athens Ford, please do so. Check out those Raptors. That's a fantastic vehicle. Could have used one out there. I was driving one of their Ford hybrid vehicles. Drove from Vegas to L.A. on three-quarters of a tank, four-hour drive. So if you're looking for a hybrid vehicle, check out Ford. They have them for you. Check out Your Pie. Best pizza you can get. I've had pizza in L.A. and Vegas. Still nothing compares to Your Pie. So swing out and check them out. Coach, we're going to jump right into it with the talking about the Rose Bowl win. I think that was a probably – I don't want to say it's the greatest game I've ever seen because I'm worried I'm forgetting one, but I'm having a hard time coming up with something that was more fun, more – well, and sometimes heart-stoppingly bad, but more crazy and more amazing than that Rose Bowl victory. Just the setting, its implication for Georgia getting into the title game for the first time in 35 years – a double overtime win, the redemption for Sony Michel, you know, who already scored three times and he fumbles, and you know, you worry that that's the last touch he's going to get, then he hits your game winner. Nick Chubb running people over, Lorenzo Carter, the guy who comes back for a senior year, you know, with a big block, and the other players like Hudson Prather and Keon Brown on these big tackles on kickoffs. It's just team effort, so many storylines to go from. And Georgia gets there. I really can't think of a bigger game. I don't want to say it's the biggest yet because I'm trying to. I'm sure there's one out there, but can you come up with a bigger win for Georgia lately?
You know, the bottom line, you got to have a big win like that to get to the dance. And as you mentioned, there's so many peaks and valleys in the game, and it just goes to show you the mindset that Kirby has pervaded with this team from the standpoint that, you know, things aren't as bad as they seem sometimes, and sometimes they're not as good. But the whole point is you're going to do what's necessary to get the W. And I thought that got a good break there at the end of the first half when they tried that squib kick and it didn't work. And we got the five-yard
play. Tay Crowder, a guy that just –
right. Takes – you got to be part of a team, but you got to be – you know, aware, and that's good coaching. You tell them, hey, most teams are going to squib it or pooch kick in that situation, even though they'd kicked off every time out of the end zone. But again, we're going to go through a lot of different variables and things that happened during the game. But there's no question our preparation was good. Kirby's experience being involved in the games and knowing how to, practice and get the team ready and separate the, different things you have to do affiliated with the game, but also making sure your team is focused and beat a good team. I'm telling you, I mean,
said. Give me your 3 points. You nailed this. And for folks who are watching this and who are listening to the podcast later, before the game started, you texted me 3 keys to the game.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you want to share them, but I think you should.
I texted them to you because I wanted to let you know what I thought, but I wasn't going to put that out in public because I didn't think it was fair to either team. But
it's over,
you know,
now.
There's no question that we needed to stop the run some way, because without the ability to stop the run, then it just made it so much easier for them to pass. And we did that in the second half. And then, you know, just some other areas that I really don't want to disclose because I don't want Alabama to hear about them. But I do feel like that that the one thing that was very evident to me was that we didn't make a lot of radical changes in the second half defensively, but offensively, people were kind of bagging on Chaney in the first half for throwing the ball. But I think he had a really good mindset of by throwing some, it was going to loosen up their defense and make their DBs tackle our wide receivers instead of their inside people and, you know, hopefully wear them down. And I thought that was pretty evident there in the second half that – that, you know, once we really got it rolling, the offensive line and the way the backs ran and just explosive plays. You don't expect to see that many explosive plays by one team. And we really held their explosive plays down. They didn't have a lot of long balls, hit that 142-yarder. But and then the overtime, I mean, I just thought that that we played very aggressive and played very within the framework of what we could do, and I thought OU played very tight. I mean, you got a Heisman Trophy winner, and you know he only touched the ball one time in overtime as far as making a play, and that was on the offside play, but didn't attempt one pass, and they put in a guy that hadn't run the ball the whole game and ran a jet sweep with him. So, you know, sometimes you got to be careful about getting away from what got you there, and I thought our defense was outstanding, but I think they helped us a little bit the way they call plays there in overtime. And you actually sent me a text during the game, which I thought was good. After the game, you said, I thought Kirby was calling the offensive plays for them so that our defense could stop them. And well, it looked like it, too. That was a good call by you,
Well,
Roddy.
Just say that when you run, back-to-back jet sweeps in overtime, and you're taking the ball out of that hand.
Especially after you run the ISO on first down and make 5 yards. But, you know, that's the thing about play calling. I've been second-guessed my whole life, and I understand that. I think Riley did a brilliant job all year. There's no question he's a supreme play caller. But at the same time, you know, I always talk to our teams about overtime. You got to practice overtimes, you know what I mean? Because you're one play away from either playing in a national championship or not playing in it. So our ability to block the kick, their inability to protect on the kick, our ability to stop them when we, you know, really, after they stopped us and we're getting ready to, you know, they got 25 yards to win the national championship. What a big stop that was to make him kick that first field goal. I really thought Riley was going to go for it on fourth and a yard. And I also thought Kirby might have considered going for two at the end of regulation. But I also, and looking at it from his standpoint and Chaney's, there was no question that we had the edge in a 25-yard field the way we could pound the rock.
Well, see, my thought was if they're going to overtime, you know, Georgia's going to play a conservative defense, and you're going to sit not a lot of pressure, and Baker Mayfield is going to have time to hit that big tight end somewhere. That, I mean, you can't cover that guy for very long. And so I was nervous going into overtime. I was thinking, you know, like you, hey, maybe, you know, when you get that score, you go for two, you know, put it all on the line. Of course, then we saw that recently. I can't remember who did that.
Army did it against
Army. There you go.
Against and they're in. I got a chance here on national TV here right here for this. We got three defensive coordinators that are head coach. Patterson, who's the defensive head coach for the TCU Horned Frogs. They did a good job. He calls the defenses. Rocky Long calls the defenses for the San Diego State Aztecs, and Bracco Mendenhall calls them for the Virginia Wahoos Cavaliers.
Yeah.
Those two teams, Navy and Army, absolutely assaulted their defense those two games. 48-7 Navy won, and then I think Army had the ball for over 40 minutes against San Diego State. Jeez. And then they went for two. But you think with all that time to practice and with the head coach being the defensive coordinator, hey, send me a memo. I won't charge you but $1.380, and I'll talk to you about how to stop the loaded option. Come on, man. That was bad. That was really bad by both those guys. I mean,
act now, he'll throw in how to stop the triple option, too.
Hey, no, but I mean, you got to do something different. You can't sit there. I mean, these guys just annihilate. But let's get back to our fans here. But I had to throw that out. It was just so funny to me that Navy and Army went with a different idea that always remember this, Roddy.
All right.
There's a difference between exposure and being exposed. They were exposed.
Yeah.
So let's get back to the other thing, though. On the overtime, and I've seen Kirby practice this, they go out there and say, hey, it's third down, we got to stop them to make them kick a field goal. It's third down, we got to make a first down and get a touchdown. You know, they work on all those scenarios. Most teams do that, too. But usually speaking, and we had to play a lot of overtimes in 1AA, you know, and I always talk to our team about, hey, we got to understand no penalties. A penalty in overtime is deadly.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, just no question because – and then the other thing is protect the ball at all costs because a turnover, it's pretty much over. And then the other thing is whatever your best stuff is, get to it.
Yeah.
Hey, you don't need –
do what you do.
Because one of the worst things I ever do, and I'm sure Lincoln Riley's talking about, I wish we'd have done this, I wish we'd have done that. Hey, man, you got to do it. And that's when old Jim Chaney came out with that sugar to the left. I mean, showed him his taillights, didn't he?
He did.
He could have run all the way down to O.J. Simpson's house.
Or go through that valley up to Oral Hershiser.
Well, I don't think O.J. lives there anymore. But
he's in Vegas now.
But seriously, is he in Vegas or Florida?
He's in Vegas.
I thought he was going to Florida before he could. But
let's be careful there.
But what a – maybe you can – I don't want to talk all the time. Maybe you can just – we were talking to Josh a little bit about being around. We had some other fans that were there. But just tell us what it's like to be in that atmosphere.
I'll put it to you this way. And this is why I say I'm trying not to say this was the greatest game ever that I've covered. I've been doing this since 1993. Started working with Claude Felton. Was there, you know, when you were hired. I remember doing the photo of your – the introductory photo of you when you came in. Covered a lot of amazing games. Covered, you know, Georgia beating Alabama in overtime. Beating LSU on the road and at home, some of those crazy games. The blackout against Auburn, I've been there for all of them. They've all been amazing. But this game in particular, watching that 60% of the fans out there were Georgia fans. And, you know, if you're Oklahoma, you had a tough call. Do you fly to Pasadena and cover, you know, watch that game?
They got the money, though. They got that oil money out there, man.
But then and then turn around and go to Atlanta, or do you wait for your team to win?
You do it. You do it.
But see, the Georgia fans had it made. They're like, we just go to Pasadena, and then if they win it, they go to Atlanta, we got it made. So the Georgia fans went en masse. And for me and my guys to get out there, I have a friend in Vegas who owns a casino out there. He put us up for the night. So we flew into Vegas and then drove over. Worked out great. So we're staying at the Stratosphere Hotel, a casino. Great place to go. Official plug there, by the way. And it's odd timing. We're, you know, 5 days ahead of the game. We're spending the
Tell
one
us
night.
About the game, man. Well, we don't want to Ralph Edwards. This is your life.
No, my point
Tell
is
us about the game,
the guy
man.
Is I'm 5 days early in Vegas. There's Georgia fans everywhere.
I mean, did you win any money?
Yeah, a little.
All right.
A little bit.
Did you lose any?
A lot. But you just said it's not about me, Coach. So 5 days early, they all head over into Vegas. They're there, Georgia fans everywhere. Then on the right end, we see Georgia flags. And, you know, for the 28th, 29th, 30th, 31st, everywhere we go, we're running into Georgia fans. Me and Dave went out to the racetrack at Santa Anita. They put out a thing for the Georgia fans. They had a room, a trackside seating, probably about 80 Georgia fans out there.
Did you win anything there?
Dave did.
Dave, so what'd you come up with, Dave?
Dave.
Exacta box, man. Exacta
box for Dave McMahon to the tune of he bought about 480.
Well, what you got to do is list that on your taxes.
No, we're not talking about taxes.
No.
So, but point being, I mean, a couple days before the race, Georgia fans everywhere. Everywhere we stopped, Hollywood, looking up and down Hollywood and Sunset Boulevard, Georgia fans left and right. This place was absolutely bonkers for the takeover was real. We went out to the Santa Monica Pier. Georgia fans left and right. Now, we did see some Sooner fans, but nothing like we saw the Georgia fans. Get to the stadium. There were people tailgating 3 days early. We did a live shot with 11 Live Sports out there, and, you know, we have the Rose Bowl in the background, and we did a Sports Extra show. Georgia fans already tailgating 2 days early.
I will say this. You had more airtime on NBC than Johnny Carson ever had.
We did. It was fantastic. Probably the highlight of my career to be out there in front with the Rose Bowl behind me.
Did you have
TV.
A makeup girl and everything?
No,
you?
No. Come on. You can't do anything with this, Coach. They don't make that kind of makeup.
Well, hey, that game's history. Let's talk about the new one.
But just saying, when the Georgia ran out, I said it was probably 55-45 Georgia fans, but when you heard the roar of the crowd, that geeked him up. And after that field goal, going into half. The fans were, I mean, they were very loud. And when they came out and got a the way the second half changed, that changed. And it felt – that's the only time it really felt like a home game because the
– Yeah, first 30 minutes were kind of –
No, the first 30 minutes were brutal. But at halftime, I actually reached into my bag and I pulled out it's a short lens that I use for taking celebration photos. And I told the guy across from me, I said – even though Georgia's getting hammered right now, I mean, think about it. They're giving up 31 points. Was last time they'd given up 31 points? The Ole Miss game the year before when it got absolutely destroyed, 31 points and a half. The game is done. But I said, you know, I'm going to take out my celebration lens just in case this is the biggest comeback in Rose Bowl history, and it was. And they did it. And the Sony Michel just bawling his eyes out after the game. You know, big Jonas Jennings holding him, and he's just crying, you know, telling everybody to give him some space. I saw Mel Tucker's streaming, all these grown men just reduced to tears of happiness and elation. Again, I'm not saying it's the greatest game I've ever seen, but I cannot come with one better than that. So the atmosphere, the Rose Bowl people, and I was told this before going out there, they said, look, the Rose Bowl people are – they're going to take care of you and the players unlike any bowl you've ever been to. And you hear that every year. Oh, the Tax Slayer Bowl is going to take care of you better. The Peach Bowl, all these wonderful bowls are supposed to be the best ever. But I will say this. There's a reason everybody loves going to the Rose Bowl. There is a reason the players do, the coaches do, the families do. When they take care of you, they really take care of you. It was fantastic, top-notch organization. I was blown away by the hospitality. And, I mean, they even gave the media a police escort up to the stadium and back.
Well, you needed to, a bunch of drunks.
I mean. Exactly. A bunch of drunks that would have plowed in. The highway patrol would have been everywhere. It's kind of neat to see the Chips out there. I grew up watching Chips, you know, and got to see the California Highway Patrol out there. Nice guys.
Right.
They took care of us. But that game, I mean, like I said, you look at offensively, defensively, special teams. I mean, Rodrigo Blankenship misses a field goal, and you're like, how many Georgia games have you seen in which they miss a field goal and they lose the game, and then he knocks down a 55-yarder? I mean, just the redemption stories side to side.
Well, sometimes when you're kicking one from that distance, there's not a lot of heat on you because nobody expects you to make
it.
You know, and he just he's had a remarkable career, and everybody has a different phase in the program that you have to deliver on, and he certainly has. Nozlik had some great punts. Look at the kicking game in the second half. If you just talk about our coverage on the first two kickoffs, knocking them back there, their punt for 29 yards when the game was on the line, you know, to set up our last drive, you know what I mean? So all these things add up, the blocked field goal, the 55-yard. So one out of six plays is a kick. But we're here to talk about playing against the Nictator and going against the mentor and the student, so to speak. But I think the one thing that Kirby has done is he's got his own stamp. He does some things like Alabama. There's no question. You always – but what he knows how to do is articulate to his coaches and players what he wants. He's in charge. And it's going to be a very physical game over there. I guarantee you. Reminds me of when we played Alabama – I mean, when we played Miami in the 87 Orange Bowl and the amount of players on the field that were pro prospects. Yeah. I mean – for both teams, you're just going to see an inordinate amount of athletic-looking teams that both have the same blueprints with good defense, good kicking game, power running game. It's just going to be a tight-fit game.
Well, I thought it was like this, and not to be too big of a nerd on the whole thing, but it felt like – to me, it's like a science fiction story where you, if you're Tennessee or Georgia, you are effectively playing yourself. You're playing a team that runs a similar defense, a similar offense, similar focus on special teams. You have first-round players. They have first-round players. You have second-round players. They have second-round players. You have a conservative coach calling plays. You have another conservative coach calling plays. Both are waiting for the other to make a mistake to capitalize on it. Turnovers are – I mean, you know, every coach preaches turnovers, but these two know that that's where the game changes, and they're ready to pounce on a moment's notice. And I saw in practices out in Pasadena, we see Georgia do ball strip drills and ball security drills. I've never seen anything like what they were doing in Pasadena.
Yeah, but
they
here's
had,
the deal, though. You don't get to see them
rip it away.
You don't get to see them practice here like
no,
you do.
They
have a 15-minute period out there that's mandated, so you got to see more practice than you have all year.
But we saw the same drills, but the intensity on these drills
they
were
do
nuts.
That, though. They do a lot of that.
Yeah,
the same
I know.
Way.
They do it all the time. But
I wanted to ask you this, and I'd like for the fans to just go back to 2.5 years ago, but Georgia versus Alabama, Coach Rick, Georgia's favored against Alabama in Sanford Stadium by 4 points. Let's look at what's happened between that game and today.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Rick's no longer the coach here. Jeremy Pruitt's the defensive coordinator, now the head coach of Tennessee. Kirby Smart's now the head coach here. Tucker is the defensive coordinator. You've got Schumann, who was on that staff over there. He's over here now. And then you got these other guys for Alabama. You realize they only have one coach on their staff now that coached in that game.
Wow.
Burt, the running back coach. Mario Cristobal is the head coach at Oregon.
Right, so he's out.
Billy Napier is the head coach at Lafayette. Kiffin's the head coach at Florida Atlantic, and Kirby's the head coach here, and Pruitt is now the head coach of Tennessee. All of that stuff has happened in 800 days now.
Right.
We got all that different, but now we're playing them again, and the stakes are pretty much the same, except now you're playing for the big old Chilardo here. You're playing for everything.
And I thought this was fascinating. You know, after the game, I asked Kevin Shearer, are you sticking around? I mean, I knew that he was there to coach Georgia through the Rose Bowl because, you know, that's standard. Or not, I should say standard.
That was a rhetorical question, wasn't it? Of course
he's sticking around. But I needed the quote, being a journalist, I needed him to actually say, yes, I am. And just because some people would say, well, he said he was staying through the bowl game. Well, he said he was staying through the playoffs. So the playoffs are still going, so he's still there. But I got him to confirm it that he
was
going.
Well, here's what you can see. This is Jeremy Pruitt, and you're Nick. Hey, Nick, good luck. I got you here. You take it on home, buddy.
Exactly.
Or sure.
And
hey,
sure, could have done the same thing.
They're going to come home with it. I mean, that's part of the deal.
Yeah.
And that's what Kirby did
years ago. Kirby did it, and I thought it was
you owe it to the players.
Exactly.
You owe it to everybody. And it's,
finish you what you started.
You don't get as much chance to do that. How about this guy right here? He's getting $2.5 million a year, Dave Aranda, the new defensive coordinator. I mean, he's been the defensive coordinator at
LSU.
Second-team quarterback. He hadn't played all year. Just beat him for Notre Dame.
And $10 million guaranteed.
But he's got $10 million as a defensive coagulator.
Well, speaking of, like you said, the defensive coagulators, Jeremy Pruitt, now the head coach at Tennessee, he is coaching against his future defensive coordinator in Kevin Shearer.
Right.
I mean, think about it. You have the Tennessee head coach and the Tennessee defensive coordinator on two different sides of the ball going at each other for two different teams in the national title game.
This is Jeremy Pruitt now. He's calling up Shearer, said, look, I want you to go call up so-and-so. We're recruiting him hard. I want you to do this. And by the way, what are y'all going to run on 3rd and 6? I mean, seriously, what do you do there? I can't tell you, Coach, but, you know, there's too much ethics involved. These guys aren't going to talk about that.
And, you know,
but I will tell you a story about the blueprint. And, you know, we do a lot of things in the weight room like Alabama, and we got some things that Coach Sinclair does here. But, you know, stretching, all that. So more than likely the time frame to warm up will probably be close to each team doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they'll come
exactly.
out. Well, I coached with a guy at Missouri named Warren Powers, and he got the job at Washington State. And he and his staff, he brought three younger guys from Nebraska, had all coached at Nebraska the year before, okay? So that as fate would have it, their first game was against
– oh, sorry.
What do we got here?
Hang on 1 second.
We got this big time here?
No, sorry.
All right, so their first game happened to be at Nebraska, Washington State. So you can imagine they're doing the same stretching. They're doing everything the same, okay?
Right.
So Mark Heidorf was a defensive end coach, and he started looking around for one of his players. And his guy was down there stretching with Nebraska. They thought, you know, they were calling the numbers out there, doing the leg switch, do that. Exactly the same. He didn't know any different, but he didn't realize he was in Nebraska's stretching deal.
Oh, my God.
So I hope none of Alabama's players come over to ours. But that's one of the all-timers as far as, okay, Warren just took what Tom Osborne had. Okay, you know, kickers out at this time, yep. Defensive ends, all that. But Heidorf went down there and grunted, what are you doing down here?
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. I can definitely, knowing Kevin Shearer and knowing Jeremy Pruitt, I'm not saying that there's a wager on the line, but the bragging rights in this game between those two when they get back to Tennessee and talk it over are going to be monumental. Because I mean, this is something that will be lorded over each other forever. You know?
And, you know, for the Tennessee fans, hey, your number one rival and your number two rival, regardless, it's either way, you know, yeah. Florida's maybe up there too, but Alabama and Georgia, they're rivals. Who do you pull for? I mean, come
on.
They're
pulling for a meteor, Coach.
But they're taking from what I've read, they're taking the high road. Hey, our defensive coordinator's helping them, who's now the head coach, is helping them win a championship. But there's no question that you build a bond with your players as a coordinator, though. You know, you got that confidence. Feeling like our guys have with Chaney and Tucker and the overall team with Coach Smart, but just the fact that, you know, all of a sudden you don't have that guy making the calls that knows everything about it, that's tough in a bowl game. And you've seen it so many of these teams, and that's why I applaud Mississippi State, play without their quarterback, without their offense, defensive coordinator and head coach, and still won the game. I thought that was pretty good.
Well, I'm going to give all the credit for the Mississippi State win to my buddy DJ Looney out
probably
there.
Probably did a good job with the line there. Where's he going now? What's his job?
I don't know. I haven't spoken to him since he left. So I just know that when he was here, I always loved watching him coach up the offensive lineman. And Christian Robinson, who was out there, also a guy whose career I will follow. So I'm hoping to see DJ Looney and Christian Robinson move to bigger and better things.
Exactly.
Good guys. And Christian, of course, one of the Georgia's great interior linebackers, and DJ Looney, one of the architects for all that fantastic recruiting class Georgia brought in last year. He set the groundwork for a lot of the guys they landed this year. So even though I've mentioned him before, but that's a big, big loss for Georgia when he went out to Mississippi State. They have a 10th coaching spot open up. If you can bring him back home, that'd be a good idea.
Yeah, here's the thing about these recruiters, though. I guarantee you one thing, you're a lot better recruiter at Georgia than you are at Valdosta State.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, nothing against Valdosta, no. But I mean,
it's a little bit easier.
You got a better shot at getting these guys. And I think sometimes assistant coaches and everybody get a little bit too much credit for recruiting, although they do a great job. There's no question about that. But bottom line, that G, as I've said before, is powerful, and the fact that they're winning even helps even more, winning on this level. I mean, you've got these great reports from these Under Armour games.
I was just about
to
mention those.
All that. So,
Let me jump in real quick because you teed that up, and we'll make this the Your Pie recruiting segment real quick. We have Jake Roos. He is out in San Antonio covering the Army All-American game. And he put up a story this morning about the Georgia signees and how well they're doing out there. Jamari Sawyer, the number one offensive guard in the country, is kicking butt and taking names. Trey Hill, the number two offensive guard in the country, both who are signed to Georgia. Trey Hill has been Mr. Consistency out there. He has been knocking guys to the ground like he normally does. He has that huge base that's just tough to get around. They've been killing it. Luke Ford, the top tight end of the nation who signed with Georgia, started out a little slow, but has really turned it on, is catching passes with those giant paws of his. He has huge hands, Coach. I mean, it looks like he's catching one of those Nerf balls when he holds on to one. So Luke Ford is really doing a great job out there. Aziz Ojulari, Zamir White, and somebody else, I can't think of the third person, they are not participating because they were injured. You know, they had the knee ACL tears. So those guys, but they're out there, so they won't be participating
in the game.
I think
it's good they get to go out there still.
Then we also had Trent Smallwood, our other recruiting guy. He was down at the Under Armour All-American game in Orlando. So we had reporters in Macon with Paul Meharry covering the Rising Seniors game, Orlando, San Antonio, Pasadena. We've been all over this week. Tons of coverage at UGASports.com, so be sure to check it out. And the reason I bring up the Under Armour game, Justin Fields was down there. no longer a cast on his hand. He's not going to participate in the game itself, but he was going through one of the passing challenges. He looked good, and the word is he's still trying to decide whether or not he wants to enroll early. My guess is that Justifield does enroll. He does enroll early and goes through spring camp. To bring it back around to the Rose Bowl in this upcoming game, you saw Georgia on two separate occasions go to that wild dog formation. And I know early in the season, Georgia fans detested the wild dog formation, but then it started working. My question to you, do they run that same thing, or do they just put in Justin Fields next year?
Who knows about that? That's a long
way
away.
Well, what would you do?
Well, Sony and Nick aren't going to be ready to do it, but Swift will. But I think it's a good change up, particularly on the goal line, because, you know, you've got a power back and you got that extra blocker and you spread them out. But I think we'll just have to see how Justin progresses. But it certainly adds to the wild dog when you got the threat of the pass, too.
That's true.
So let's see if we got some questions here. Let's see if you can read them.
And I want to – yeah, you know I can't read, Coach. But to that end, we see in a lot of let me pull this up real quick. Let me turn that off. We see a lot of people asking about the last five remaining spots in Georgia's class. And what I'm seeing
five spots.
There's five spots. Now, granted, Georgia has three commits still.
Hopefully we can change that, get that the kid, Quay, we can get him.
I was going to say Quay Walker. That's one of the first questions. I'm trying to find the text I was sent by somebody who knows about this young man. And let's just say that it's been rather a couple of his teammates. Quay Walker is a young man who's committed to Alabama. A couple of his teammates expect him to flip to Georgia. We spoke to him recently.
You're talking about in the bowl game?
No. Some of his current high school teammates who were at the Rising Seniors game said, you know, yeah, we kind of expect him to flip to Georgia from Alabama to Georgia. We spoke to him recently, and he says, well, I'm still committed to Alabama, but I'm going to take visits to Auburn, Georgia. He's not going to take an official visit to Alabama, says he doesn't need to. That kind of tells me that
you just never know about that. But
I like Georgia's chances.
I think something that's really saying as far as the landscape of our rivals, though, if you look into last year when we had Sony and Nick and these guys come back, those four players, you know, that made up their mind to come back, Auburn right now has already got four juniors that have already gone out and said they're going to, you know, Holland, Petway, Kieran Johnson, and the defensive back, Charlton Davis. So they're losing four quality players there, plus the seniors are losing. So I don't feel sorry for them. But, hey, Coach Malzahn got that new contract and subsequently lost two games. Right?
You're correct. You are correct. He got the new contract, lost two games.
$49 million, $7 million a year. And the last 4 years, they've lost the last, you know, have trended downward at the end of the year. I will say this, though. They did beat the two teams that are playing in the championship. You got to give them credit for that. And then Central Florida beat them.
Central Florida, your national champion this year?
Oh, maybe of Disney World, but that's about it.
What do you think? I mean, they go undefeated. They're paying their coaches the bonuses.
I mean, $325,000. No, that's not that big a deal. But at least they're going
to
pay
them. It is to
me. It is to everybody. I mean, I'd set myself on fire for that right now. But, you know, when you look at what
you'd set yourself on fire for these.
Those frog legs are for you. I'm going with the.
Yeah, we have the world famous Champions frog legs here on the table.
I'm going with just the tenders right now because I'm starving. But I think when you take over a team that lost every game and then 2 years later you win every game, you're doing something right.
Yeah.
Scott Frost is an outstanding young coach. He's got a lot of belief in himself. He's got a good staff. I was surprised how good they did defensively against Auburn. Auburn has proven against us in the second half, against Clemson, and against Central Florida – then when it's third down, they cannot protect the quarterback.
No.
We pressured the heck out of him. Never got him in third down much the first game. You know, 11 sacks against Clemson. And but let's get on to this Alabama game here before we have to eat dessert.
Now it says Steve Rosie says, what do you say to those who complain that having two SEC teams in the finals is bad for college football?
I think they need to go do something else and worry about I mean, realistically, it's good from this standpoint. Take it all into effect. These guys earn that right any way you look at it by their performance on the field. They don't say anything about two ACC teams playing in the basketball tournament at the end or whatever it might be, or Pac-12. So they have a lot more teams to pull to draw from. But I just feel like and the SEC hasn't done as well in the bowl games this year, that's for sure. But I think the bottom line is SEC top to bottom is not near as tough as it's been, for sure, the East particularly. But for Georgia – deserves to be in it because of that big win over Auburn. Alabama deserves a win because of the way they played all year. And they completely destroyed Clemson. I mean, well, Clemson only gets 100 yards the first three quarters.
I mean, this is the thing that got me. Okay, Clemson was going into the final projections, if you will, the bowl committee, playoff committee, as, guaranteed number one, automatic number one. It wasn't even a question. They're like, well, Clemson's first, obviously. And I always question, why obviously? They have one loss. All these other teams have one loss. Why are they obviously number one? And,
number one hadn't been in the final game yet.
Yeah. So they're like, number one. And so they bring
up number two loss, too.
And that's my point. So Georgia gets in number three. You can't keep out the SEC champions. And then Alabama gets in, and everyone's complaining, well, it's not Ohio State. You know, it's not Big Ten. And my point was, well, there are a lot of one-loss teams out there that deserve to be in this game, that have
you can't lose a game by 31 points and play for a national championship.
And Alabama gets their reward. Okay, we're going to let you in, but we're going to put you up to this, mighty, mighty Clemson team who they took to the woodshed. So, okay, if you're mad about having two SEC East teams or two SEC teams in there, show me a team. You had mighty Clemson that wouldn't have gotten drubbed by Alabama on that day.
Make comparisons like that. I just think, in my mind, I think the four best teams were in it.
Yeah, I agree. Here's a question for you, Coach. This is from Hal Love. How do you see the matchup between the Georgia defensive line and the Alabama offensive line?
I don't think offensively their line is quite as dominant as it's been in the last few years from a standpoint of a bunch of King Kong guys that just knock you all over the place, but they do have big, strong, physical guys. Jonah Williams, and 66 got hurt the other night, starting right guard. I don't know if he's going to be ready or not. Had some kind of leg injury. They were over there messing with his brace. So if he's out, that's a big deal. The cohesiveness of your line makes a lot of difference. But I like our D-line. I like the fact that this is more the style that we're built around. We, take on blocks, not a lot of spread stuff. You got to be careful about quarterback runs, though, because Hurts will hurt you with that. But it's going to be a hammer and tong game. I mean, those big backs running at you and kind of game that Roquan just should flourish in, I think.
Well, it's funny you say that. Quick shout out to Founders Brewing. They have been taking care of me. Jake's not here. He's out in San Antonio, so I will drink his all-day IPA for him.
Yeah, you go ahead.
I mean, hey, I'm here for my staff.
What about these shots here? What do we got here?
Well, those are, championship.
You need to tell them about what Josh said. If they come in, what is that, Josh? Bring in a Rose Bowl ticket. They'll get
– they get – what is it? What do you call it?
A Rose Bowl ticket to take a picture with. They'll get the George Thurgood special.
All right, so if
that's it.
So if you come in with your Rose Bowl ticket, so Josh can take a picture of you for having gone out to the Rose Bowl, he will give you the George Thurgood special, which I'm assuming is one bourbon, one scotch, and one beer.
Yeah, right here. Just bring this in, get your picture, mate. You get one scotch, one bourbon, one beer, and a hammer to knock you out,
and a ride home.
A guy said, "What kind of drink?" Said to me, "What kind of drink is that?" I said, "Hey, a glass of water and a hammer do the same thing to you." Drink the water and hit your head on the
hammer. He'll be happy to hook
you
up.
That's pretty impressive. Now we got a lot of people in here. That's good incentive.
Yeah, I'm loving that plan.
He comes up with all these different ways to be nice to these people. They're the ones benefiting coming in here. Yeah. They don't need to give away stuff to come in here.
We had to take a week off of this podcast because we ate that champ that you brought out last time.
That champ. Those guys in Chattanooga are still talking about that. They still bragging about coming down to Champions. Of course, they got one up there, but yeah, not but as good
not
as ours.
Not the one here.
But I'm going to tell you, let's get some more questions.
Now, you mentioned Hurts quarterback. Cindy asked, how does Georgia contain him?
Well, he's difficult to contain, but the best thing you can do to him is keep him in the pocket and get vertical pressure on him. If he gets on the edge, he's very difficult, you know what I mean? So we got to be careful there. We also talked about against Mayfield, two-man. You know, if you play two-man against him, then you're playing man underneath, and he can break the line and make a lot of runs. We saw that with Clemson a few times the other night when their quarterback broke the line of scrimmage and made some runs there later in the game. But I think the main thing with us, again, is get them into third down situation where they don't have the ability to run or pass third and long, get some penalties. But our defense has really played down and distance well in the second half and got some really, you know, with all those sacks on Mayfield, you know, we felt like, talking to Kirby going into the game, if we could get some of that situation in the first half, we didn't, but get them into third down, that there's some things in their protection that might help us a little bit. And for the fans out there getting a little technical, if you've got an offensive line that most of the time are running RPOs and coming off the ball and not setting up the pass block, it's a different thing, and that's why it's hard to analyze a pro prospect now, because they don't set back and do the pure pass protection like we right. used to. They're more play action and RPOs. So we attacked them with it. You know, we saw some twists work for us. You saw some inside pressure.
God, yes.
And good coaching.
I was focusing on DeAndre Baker. I mean, DeAndre Walker, one play. He lined up a nine technique. I mean, he was so far outside, Coach. I thought he was almost still in the play, out of bounds. And his first step, and because it was third down, and DeAndre Walker has been a nightmare for other teams on third down, I said, I'm going to follow him. Now, normally, I'm following the ball, following the play. And so through that long lens, I followed him run behind Roquan. I mean, his angle was so deep because Roquan stepped up. He ran behind him, came to the middle, and no one touched him the entire way. He cut off the pursuit angle, ran him right into, I think, Lorenzo Carter, and then both of them got a hold of him. And then right up the gut on another third down, Jonathan Ledbetter taken that guard
good.
And spun him, and the guard has a hold of his jersey. They're kind of falling, and he fell right on Baker Mayfield. It's like for an unintended sack. He's like, hey, look what I found, a little Christmas morning present there. For
well, what happened here Ledbetter. Early in the year, we talked about the continuity in our defense. Last year, they're trying to learn the defense, learn where to, you know, the nuances of it. But once you learn the base and feel good about it, then you can get into intricacies of different kind of pass rush, different kind of ability to pressure from the edge. And what that helps you with, Roddy, is gives you a lot more for the other team to prepare for. They just can't say, hey, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. So if they got to spend 10 more minutes a day on these exotic blitzes and stuff, that takes away from their base prep. So, and the other thing is, you know, people are talking about this 7-day turnaround. It is a tough deal to play a team within 7 days, but we do that all the time during the year.
So
just a little bit more press work for the players, a little bit more media stuff for the coaches, but it's just nothing like going in and playing for a national championship.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to relate to anything about what I did. I was fortunate enough to coach in some of those. But I am going to tell you, if you ever get one of those rings and you have it, if you either wear it or it's in your house or in your safety deposit box or wherever it is, one of the most treasured things you'll ever see, because you know that you just kicked some big-time ass. And you know that you're the best, and nobody can ever take that away from you. I know when we got the first one, and I got there with Coach Switzer, he told those guys, hey, it's $350. That's what we can spend on it, you know.
Yeah.
He said, that's for the players, but the coaches, we're getting real diamonds in there. So I just got some huge, huge diamonds. Got a big number one in there, and it was
Well, think about this. If Georgia pulls this game off, if they win it, they will have beaten – look, you saw what they did to the SEC East. They just demolished the East. That was actually embarrassing. They have gone undefeated at home. They will have avenged the only loss of the year against Auburn. They will have beaten Auburn, the SEC West champions, in a resounding fashion in the SEC championship game. They will have taken on the greatest offense in the world. That's how people were describing Oklahoma. They will have beaten them.
And then, Oklahoma hadn't lost a game in a long time.
And then they will have, if
except
they won
that one game to Iowa State. But you go back to last year to Oklahoma. But again, the caveat, though, is this right here. You're playing against a team that's going for their fifth national championship under Nick Saban.
Exactly.
But let's just do the what if here and go back 10 years, all right? 2008, Tim Tebow in the SEC championship game played like unbelievable, and they knocked them out, and so they didn't get to go that year. Then you got the kick six, which is just a miracle play
at the
end of the game against Auburn. And then you got their head by 14 points against Ohio State, and then Ezekiel Elliott goes nuts, and Lane Kiffin forgot to run Derrick Henry for about two. I thought he'd gone to the French Quarter there for a couple of hours. So you take those three. This would be a situation where they're playing for the national championship the ninth time in 10 years.
Yep. And look at the one they lost last year on the little rough play.
And the good thing about it, KS – alias Kirby Smart, he's involved in all of those. Yeah. So, hey, so one of them's going to win their fifth national championship and the other one's going to get fourth. So,
those rings, man.
We got to go with Kirby on that one.
But
isn't that amazing?
That is.
The run. So I'm saying I'm adding to your brilliance of our season. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You're talking about the brilliance of doing all those things, but then to top it off by beating the cock of the walk, the top team.
I mean, there's Nick Saban is a instant college Hall of Fame, unanimous vote, no question about it. Widely considered to be the greatest college football coach of all time.
If he wins this one, he'll tie Bear.
There you go. So the guy whose recruiting has been off the charts. And to be the man, you got to beat the man. And if you come out and you beat Auburn, Oklahoma, and Alabama,
only team you wouldn't have beat
to
is back, Central
to
Florida.
Back.
We'll meet them in Disney World.
We'll meet them
World.
In Disneyland, exactly.
That's Central Florida, man. I'm telling you, they're going right through there. Hey,
now,
I give them a lot of credit. I mean,
there is a national championship for Auburn that I recognize and nobody else does. When they went undefeated, and they start out,
that was when Tuberville was there.
Yeah, when they were ranked highly, they weren't very highly ranked.
Cadillac Williams and Ronnie Brown.
They didn't lose to anybody, and they said, you don't get to play because these other teams went undefeated, and they're number one and they're number two, and you don't get to play for the title. I thought that was bullshit, and I'm like, no. If Auburn wanted to hang a national championship banner for that year,
I think they had one there that they put up, some kind of
and
well,
I,
some
I,
guy.
I absolutely acknowledge it. Now, UCF.
College sports.
Got to play somebody better than who you
some,
play.
Some guy with college sports, they do these replica stadiums and stuff. Yeah. They gave him one of their championships.
I completely
agree
with
that. Who was the quarterback for that team, that kid from Mississippi, tall kid?
Why do you have to ask me that after I've had George Thurgood specials here? I got. While you're thinking of that, I need to answer this question from Benjamin.
Because he told me one time when we were recruiting, I said, that little point guard for y'all is pretty good. And I said, how tall is he? I said, is he 5'11"? No, he said, is he 6'1"? He said, no. He said, he's 5'12". He's 5'12".
5'12" point guard. That's nice. That's helpful.
5'12", come on.
Benjamin Pack says, is Georgia getting Tyson Campbell? He's asked that question 47
times. What did he say?
Is Georgia getting Tyson Campbell, the cornerback? When I said we would have the EuroPie recruiting
update.
Well,
we got Tyson Campbell and Surtain. Who else we got?
Yes, they're going after Surtain. Isaac Taylor Stewart is giving Georgia a good look. But I will say this. I've been told by a good source that Georgia is about to get very wealthy at the secondary positions. So
good, we need him.
I'm not saying that he's coming. I'm just saying
here's the thing about all the Georgia fans.
There's some very
fans,
good news coming
me
for
included.
Georgia fans.
You know, it's like going through a buffet and you've eaten everything on there and you still want some more. What about this class, really?
Yeah.
Seriously. hopefully they're going to get – and in the end, all we can do here is these last five. I mean, there's going to be so much what if this next 3 weeks. But the one thing we got is we got your people on top of it like a piranha, don't we?
That's what they do.
Hey, and anybody's not on your side.
I don't pay them for peanuts for nothing.
Hey, that's right. You know what you do if you pay peanuts? You get monkeys. So you got to get good people working for you, man.
I do. I have fantastic people working
for
me.
And you got them. They do. I like to read all that stuff because I need to know what time that guy's going to the bathroom every day. I mean, you guys got everything about them, don't you?
You need to know what they're wearing, what they had for breakfast, all that old stuff. And that's what we do.
It's like a guy told me one time when I was at North Carolina, and he went to see this kid, and he said, "We can't get him." I said, "Why not?" He said, "I went over there. We can't get him." I said, "Why not?" He said, "Well, I went over there, and he had on a Duke shirt." I said, "So you think he's going to Duke because he had a – I said, "What if he had on an NC State shirt or somebody?" He said, "That's just a sign. He's going to Duke." Mike Salzano, his dad was a doctor there at Duke, and we got him. That sucker was a player for 3 years for us. But, you know, just because he got a Duke shirt on, who cares?
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, we see updates like that. The kids will post something to Instagram, you know, or them wearing, like, the gloves that they got at the end of the game or something like that. And people try to take everything as a sign. If we only did that, we would have – it would be our jobs would be so much easier, but we actually do call these kids and interview them, and we fly to San Antonio, we fly to Orlando to interview them. And I like where Georgia stands with Tyson Campbell a lot.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. That's a good one. What's the next one?
Well, I got to get through all these Tyson Campbell questions because he asked about 50 times.
You like Tyson Campbell. We're going to get
him. I do.
Tell him where he's from and everything.
Excuse me. Tyson's from Florida.
All right.
Richard Gotson said, "Sounds like Bama shuts down the run. Will we be able to be effective in the run game?" Richard Gotson asked that.
I think for sure we'll be able to run the ball, but we're going to have to throw it too because they load up the box. They play, you know, their safeties are very physical, and we're going to have to hit some balls. It's not like all of a sudden we got to develop some passing game. I guarantee you, Wims has got to be in there thinking over there. Terry Godwin, these tight ends, our backside of the backfield. I mean, Fromm had a heck of a game throwing the football, and he was very effective. He had a better passer rating than Mayfield in the game. So it's not like we can't throw. It's just – and some people going crazy in the first half because we weren't running enough. But, you know, I think – just have faith in Chaney. He's going to do what he can, but we're not going to go up and down the field on them, and they're not going to do it on us. Both defenses are too good, but I think kicking game-wise, though, you know, their field goal kicker's kind of in a little bit of funk. He hit the crossbar on one the other night, and, you know, they got a great punter, though. That's J.K. Scott, man. He's Thunderfoot. So, I tell you, pregame warm-up's going to be unbelievable with Nizelec and Scott kicking the ball there and trying to hit the top of the dome, but they can't do it.
Well, I don't know. Cameron can kill that thing when he gets hold of it. He had one not-so-good punt, but, boy, he made up for it. That
when he downed that one inside the five, too. But and our kicking game took over the second half.
Absolutely. I love the fact
that – and congratulations to Scott Fountain, the analyst for our team who came here from Auburn. He's an analyst for special teams and did a terrific job working with Coach Beamer this year. Has been hired by Mississippi State. And, you know,
that's great.
He's always happy for guys to get jobs, and he's certainly done his job for Georgia, that's for sure, as has Jay Johnson.
I go back to that. What was the didn't Georgia try, like, an onside kick earlier this year, like right off the bat?
We tried an onside kick in that first game against South Carolina or something, wasn't it?
Mississippi State, somebody like that.
No, we ran against –
no, South Carolina, because the Mississippi State was the flea flicker they did right off the bat.
Yeah, but it's against somebody that, you know, people – we started the game off, and then South Carolina didn't score. But it's something that the rest of the year, everybody's got to be worried about it.
That was my point. For a guy like that who saw it, he said, "Look, if they line up like this, we can do it." And, you know – an onside kick is a tricky situation. You got to hit it just right, and your guy's got to cover it. And he – think about this. Fountain also had a former running back turned linebacker, turned up back or a first line of defense on that kickoff, Tay Crowder, ready to catch a ball that's kicked right at him. He grabs it, that changes the outcome of the game. So
that's
a guy who's done his job. And when you look out there and you see, you're like, why is Juwan Taylor and Monty Rice on kick coverage?
That's a big part of our team this year. The recruiting classes come through and doing stuff like that because it helps your other guys get a little bit more rest and everything. But
you can question it, but it's been effective. And then Miko had some good returns.
Right. He scares you to death when he kicks the ball.
And we had the same conversation before the game started when I asked him, I'm like, Miko, you and I talk about this every week. You were that close to getting one in. And Oklahoma had coverage issues.
You know what that is, though? That's a gnat's ass. You're in a gnat's ass going all the way.
And he is. And, boy, can you imagine if he returns one in this game, that kid will never buy another lunch or dinner in the state of Georgia ever again.
There's a lot of them who won't be doing that.
That's true. Hal asked another question. Says, Coach, do you think Georgia will try more short passes over Alabama's defensive line to take advantage of the linebacker play of Alabama?
Well, what he's bringing out is linebacker-wise, they've lost some guys. I think I heard on the game the other night that they've had 39 misses from the starting performances of guys. You know, when you take the aggregate of, say, Roddy's a linebacker and I'm a linebacker, between all the defensive players, they've had 39 opportunities to start that they've missed, okay? So that's a lot for one defense. But and so many of them happen at the defensive linebacker position, but they've gotten some guys back and – I don't feel sorry for them. They're going to be good on defense. Pruitt's going to – you know, he's going to have kind of a burr in his saddle going against his old players too, you know. He's going to be fired up. So, but it's going to come down to execution and being relaxed and playing your – you just want to make sure you shoot your gun. I mean, hey, you got a game like that, play with aggressiveness and understand that every play is important.
One more question for Phil Rogers. Says, will Georgia be
Phil Rogers, the old golfer?
Maybe.
No, you know, remember Phil Rogers, a short game guru? I mean, he might be kin to him.
It could be. Well, it might be the same guy, you know.
All right.
This show gets out there.
He's probably a good putter. Go ahead.
So will Georgia be throwing to the tight ends more this game?
You know, that's been a situation all year where, you know, it looks like we got good tight ends. We do. Doesn't look like it. And looks, people say, why don't you throw to them more? But as good as we run the ball, it's just hard to do everything. And basically people are trying to stop the run with more pressure, you know, with their safeties and all. So because of that, tight ends aren't as open as much and the wide receivers are. But we hit Charlie the other night with a couple and had one that Nauta could have caught, you know, in that situation. But I think it's just going to be a game of chess match between Chaney and Pruitt and between Tucker and that Daboll, the new offensive coordinator from them.
Biggest key to the game?
Boy, I tell you what, I hadn't had time to think about that, especially with these frog legs and all this stuff sitting in front of me today, putting a lot of pressure on me. I would just say for both teams is be yourself, understand the magnitude of the moment, but – you know what got you there, go with your strengths and be careful about trying to do too much. You know, don't try to get outside your character and work hard at it. And, hey, we could be like LeVar Ball over there in Lithuania getting ready to play, take his two boys over there. But we're playing for a national championship. And just everybody reflect on it. The job that Kirby's done here, one of the all-time coaching jobs in the history of college football, to turn a team to be this competitive, even though, you know, he was left some good players, but his stamp's all over this team. I give a lot of credit to Rick and his staff, some of the guys, but anybody that looks at this team and compares them to 2 years ago and doesn't see a marked difference,
they're just
probably blind.
On crack. They're blind and on crack.
Nothing wrong with – I mean, I don't mean that in a negatory situation, but you're blinded by the light.
Exactly.
You know, you got to understand what this guy's done. I mean,
the turnaround's been amazing.
You know, here's the deal right here. You remember that show Mission Impossible?
Oh yeah.
Kirby, your job is to do this: go in there, build some new facilities as quick as you can, get those players playing hard. get those players making better grades, recruit the heck out of the state of Georgia, and this thing will never explode.
There you go. Here, right? Your, what do they call it? Your challenge, if you choose to accept it. And he did. And he stepped up. He stood up. And
he's the man.
He is. And a great support
staff. Good
staff, too. You owe me a Coke, Coach.
There's the other thing I want to say, and I meant to say it. How about the way our players acted out there in front of everybody? Nobody throwing out barbs or, you know, anything. Everybody
having a little bit.
Well, that was after the game, though.
Oh, this is
true. But I'm talking about prior to the game. There wasn't – you just got the feeling
– right.
You just got the feeling that this team knew how to act. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And usually if you see a team before a game and they're – jiving around and doing stuff, you got a feeling where they're not really focused on what they need to do. This guy's got them razor focused all the time, and I think that was emblematic of the way they acted out there.
Yeah, and as much as – here's the thing. The Davin Bellamy comments to Baker Mayfield saying to humble yourself, that got played 80 million times. But you know what didn't get played was Malcolm Parrish walking off the field screaming, "It is a privilege to be a Bulldog." He said it, must have said it 10 times.
Good.
And it was as loud and in front of the cameras as much as anybody else, but that's boring.
But you know, the guys
talk radio can't talk about that.
The guy won the Heisman Trophy and everybody wants
I know, but little Malcolm Parrish, remember, who's too small to play cornerback in the SEC because, I mean, he's, what, 5'5", 5'6"? I mean, literally, he's 5'10", folks.
So let me ask you this. When the game's over and you're celebrating after the game, and are we going to have a celebratory deal next Tuesday here, or will you be back by then?
It depends on that game.
I'm
covering this team since 93. And
hey, you're all right.
This is the first time I'm covering them in a national championship game between now and the signing date. We'll definitely have one next Tuesday. Win or lose, we will be back here at noon on Tuesday. And with that, we're going to say goodnight, folks.
Thanks for the sponsors, too.
Yeah, thanks to our sponsors.
Hey, that's one thing we got to do, too. Tell us again here what we got if they bring the Rose Bowl.
Well, let me hit the response. If you come in with your Rose Bowl ticket, and Josh can take a picture of you with your ticket, he will have one bourbon, one scotch, and one beer, the George Thurgood special. And so if you come in and bring your ticket so he can get a picture of it. Special thanks to Your Pie for sponsoring our shows. Huge thanks to Athens Ford. If you need a new or used car, swing out to the home of the lifetime warranty on the powertrain. They take care of you. Thanks to Founders Brewing for giving us all the beer that we can drink, at least all the beer I can drink. I don't know about Jake Roos. I don't know that anybody can give him that much. Thanks to Cable East for sponsoring the show. Big thanks to 365 Game Day, all your Rose Bowl champion gear you need, all your game day gear. Swing up by 365 Game Day and pick it up. Huge thanks to Champions here on Baxter and 11 Alive Sports for letting us be on their page. Be sure to watch 11 Alive all week. They have a ridiculous amount of coverage coming for this game. And we will see you next Tuesday, just a few days from now, to discuss Georgia's win or loss in the the national championship game. Thank you so much for tuning in, folks.
Go Dawgs.
That's it for this episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. Tune in next week for more Georgia Bulldogs news and notes from Athens.